The way forward, this is my last slide. I think the link between ecosystem services and the green economy and natural capital, as it was raised in Rio Plus 20, and which will also be reflected in the SDGs in one way or another, is a very important one. And we need to continue to look at the underlying causes, which is the human being, why we do the decision that we are destroying biodiversity. And then I think, and I'm personally involved heavily in the synergies between the biodiversity-related conventions, and I think if we can release financial means that we put in administration of all these 500 biodiversity conventions and we do it together, I think we can do better implementation. Thank you very much.
Eu passo agora a palavra ao Dr. Spencer Thomas, embaixador Tratados e Convenções Ambientais de Granada, para finalizar a nossa palestra do dia de hoje.
Thank you, Mr. President, and thank you, Senator, for the kind invitation to be here. Let me join my colleagues in thanking you for this wonderful occasion. And of course, let me say thank you to Antonio for the excellent arrangements made for this visit. I think we heard this morning about continental-sized countries, and we heard about millions of square kilometers. So thank you for bringing a perspective from a different type of country. We're only talking here in just a few hundred square kilometers, small island developing states. I think this colloquium is truly international when we can speak in terms of continental size and also island-sized countries. So I want to bring the island perspective to this debate. And in the time allocated, to make just three major points and to establish some linkages. The first point I would like to make is that biodiversity and climate change, when combined with natural disasters, are the main constraints to development for small island developing states. And this is a fundamental statement for us. We see that these three issues are integrally linked. In fact, we call them the triple whammy, the triple dangers for small island developing states. We believe that the science of the interlinkages are very, very clear. The IPCC 5 assessment report came out very strong on this. We also felt that the GBO4, the Global Biodiversity Outlook report, was very clear on the state of our biodiversity. We heard very clearly that climate change is real. Very recently, there was a debate in the Senate of another country in the North, over 100 senators, 98 indicating, yes, climate change is real. One was not there, and, of course, one abstained. But at the same time, the flip side of the debate was that although climate change is real, we are not responsible. That was that same Senate saying the same thing. That to us was a travesty. We see the fundamental links between climate change, biodiversity, and disasters. And it is also tied to the socioeconomic development of those countries. Specifically in point is the debt to GDP ratios. In several of those small island developing states, debt to GDP ratios are in excess of 100%, maybe 120%, 130%. This is very clear. And half of this, and more than half of this debt, comes because of the situations relating to biodiversity loss, climate change, and natural disasters. It is very clear that happens. For instance, in Grenada alone, a case in Grenada, in point in Grenada, we had the situation where we didn't have a hurricane for 50 years. And in 2 years, there were two Category 3 hurricanes, one of which brought damage to the country to the extent of 200%. That is 200% of the gross domestic product. Damage to the extent that 95% of the mangroves and 95% of the forest areas have been destroyed. And it means then that the tipping points for biodiversity is a real problem. So that is the extent of the situation. So the point here is, while we speak here today, yesterday that conference ended in Japan on disaster risk reduction and so on. And at the same time, tropical cyclone Pam hit Vanuatu to significant damage to that country. The question is, the rebuilding of that country comes with serious debt to the Vanuatu people. That debt now might be owned by Paris Club guys and so. The question here is there an ethical question here that the countries which do not contribute to the climate problem but have to respond to the climate problem incur debt from those people who cause those problems and have to repay those debt by putting austerity on their populations? So there is an ethical issue here that we want to explore. The role of the polluters versus the role of the victims and the needs to repay those debt. So this is my first point. The second point I want to make here is that the 2015 Global Agenda provides opportunities to address the problem posed by biodiversity loss, climate change, and disaster risk reduction. We do have, as have already been said, the Sustainable Development Goal and the post-2015 framework. Very active debate now going on in the UN community on this particular issue. I've just mentioned the issue relating to the disaster risk reduction and the Hyogo framework that I've just completed the meeting again in Japan. We will have sooner or later coming up, I think in June, the Financing for Development, a very important forum. We had already the Convention on Biodiversity Strategic Plan, which has already been mentioned, and the Aichi targets. We are actually, in fact, in the UN International Decade on Biodiversity. We have the Samoa pathway, which deals particularly with small island developing states and the development issues, coming on the heels of the Barbados Plan of Action and the Mauritius Strategy. And at the end of this year, we will have the Paris Conference of the Parties, the Paris COP, where we will hope to achieve a legally binding agreement to deal with the climate greenhouse gas issue. So these are some particular global fora that we can exploit this year. These issues are all integrally linked, and I think there is an opportunity here for a holistic and comprehensive approach to handle the issues relating to biodiversity loss, climate change, and disaster risk reductions. My third point is relating to, for small island developing states, we believe that a strategy to address the impacts of biodiversity loss and the impacts of climate change and natural disaster lies in building resilience in ecosystems of economic, social, natural, and political systems. I want to just use one particular example and then conclude that presentation. Constitutional amendment, the case in point in Grenada. A lot have been said this morning here. Antonio mentioned it, and I heard, and we're very grateful for the experience in Brazil on this particular issue. Because Grenada is contemplating an amendment to its constitution to specifically reference climate change and biodiversity in its directive principles in that convention. The specific wording, the draft wording so far, relates to something like the state has the duty to protect natural resources, to protect and preserve the environment, to minimize contribution, and to protect against the impacts of climate change. And we have similar wording for biodiversity. This is in a constitutional provision, and we're very happy to hear. We try to see where in the world, and Antonio mentioned that Brazil might be in a unique and maybe a peculiar situation here. And I think that is correct, because we looked very hard to find where we can find constitutional provisions on these issues. And only a few came to mind at this point. We look at Tunisia, Dominican Republic, Ecuador, Norway, South Africa, and India, some of these countries. Again, of course, Brazil. So we had some questions. Question one, what are those lessons that those countries with constitutional provisions for climate change, what are the lessons that they have learned over the years? Have there been provisions been interpreted? How has those provisions been interpreted by the laws, by the court, in practice? and how to have that inform private litigants in those countries. The issue of the public trust doctrine was also very well looked at. And the question is, how practical is the public trust doctrine? And how enforceable can it be? We heard from Ecuador the issue relating to motherhood and the philosophy of motherhood. The question is, how practical, how enforceable on the international level? Can civil litigation play a role in addressing climate change? This is a fundamental question. And should we resort to the law and legal processes to handle the issue of climate change? So these are some of the questions that we are currently grappling now as we seek to have the constitutional arrangement. So let me conclude. I will say that we started this process a long time ago in terms of biodiversity and climate change. Way back in the 1980s, I could recall, the first assessment report from the IPCC came out in 1990. We had the Rio Conventions in 1992. But I think we could classify the situation as general failure to address the climate problem over the last 20 years. We will have COP21, the Conference of the Parties 21 in Paris. What is the prognosis here? What are at stake? And we have to say that a lot is at stake. This might be our last chance, we think. We call for, in the negotiation, we call for universality of action, and we call for those actions now. We say every country must take part. Can we get more granular? Why can't we say every court, every jurisdiction, every legislation must be part of this equation? Every must be taking action. The Paris COP, the Conference of the Parties for us, and the Paris Club, which is the dead people, for us, these are integrally linked for small island developing states. So the Paris COP, the Conference of the Parties, and the Paris Club for us are integrally linked. We see a bad outcome in Paris, that the seeds, the small island states, will never be able to get out of those debt traps. So in other words, we will have to continue to pay to the polluters. And that is the idea which we are getting here. And is it ethical? So I would like to stop by saying that if the Paris COP fails, do we need a special court, maybe not in Paris, to deal with the issue of climate change? Because for us, this is an existential matter. It is not a question of life here. It's dead. So thank you very much.
Quero parabenizar todos os palestrantes e dizer da nossa satisfação de tê-los recebidos aqui no Senado Federal, na Comissão de Meio Ambiente. Destacar aqui a presença do ministro Herman Benjamin, que tem colaborado muito com o nosso país, também é um grande defensor da biodiversidade, e me colocar inteira à disposição para outras palestras que queiram surgir para debater o tema, que é muito importante para o nosso país, sobretudo para o meu estado, o estado da Bahia, que é um estado que tem uma biodiversidade muito grande e que passa problemas muito graves, e eu espero aqui no Senado colaborar para conter essa situação que preocupa o Brasil e preocupa o mundo. Muito obrigado a todos vocês. Está encerrada a sessão.